kids these days, youth these days. How about saints these days? What does it look like to draw close to Jesus and live as Catholics in our increasingly complex, confusing world? We're Susanna and Chrisanne, promising no cliches, just honest conversations, personal stories, and insights into issues that affect us as modern Indian Catholics. Welcome to Saints These Days. In our last episode, we talked about what we think is the big problem in the church today. Most Catholics are not evangelized. They have not personally encountered Jesus Christ and allowed him to transform their lives. And you know, this isn't so much a judgment as an observation. We've been there. I remember what it was like to do Catholic stuff because it was the culture I was brought up in, to just go with the motions, to try to be good because that's what will get me to heaven, but to not actually have met the heart of my faith, who is a person, who is Jesus. So if you listened to that last episode and you came away from it thinking, yes, this is a problem I have seen in the church, in my parish, in my friends even, but what can I do about it? Is there a way that I can evangelize them in a way that they'll actually listen, in a way that will be effective? Well, in this episode, we are going to talk about practical ways to evangelize and to create opportunities for evangelization in our personal lives and at the parish level too.
So in my experience, evangelization is a process. I think for most of us, it isn't a one-time, you know, very dramatic change, something that just comes out of the sky, like St. Paul, you know. But I do think that there is a moment where, you know, we have to make a decision to follow Jesus. But long before that, there are a lot of evangelistic moments or, you know, things that happen that help you to come to know who God really is. And, you know, as Catholics, we don't believe that it's just evangelism, like a sort of like a one-time thing, but evangelization, like a process. And it's not enough to give a very formulaic version of the good news and, you know, ask people to pray the sinner's prayer and then, you know, they're done. I've given my life to Jesus and we're all done. So what do you think, Chrisanne? How were you evangelized? Was it a one-time thing or was it a series of encounters and events? How did it go?
It was definitely a process. So a few episodes ago, I shared my conversion story, and in that I talked about, you know, this road to Damascus moment where I heard the story of St. Paul and it changed my life. And then a few months later, I read this book called Theology of the Body for Beginners, and that was like my second conversion or my head conversion. And that probably made it seem like, you know, I had these two experiences and then I was completely sold on Jesus and, you know, it was just like a one-time thing. But actually reflecting on my life, I think that there were many instances in which I was in which the gospel was shared with me and I was invited to respond to it. So, you know, I can't really remember the first time I heard the gospel. I think, you know, for most of us as cradle Catholics, it's just something we grew up listening to. I must have been around 5 when I, like, you know, heard it for the first time and understood it. But I think it only sank in when I was 20 and I became aware that I really was a sinner in need of mercy. But before that, there were many, I call them like mini moments where the gospel became real for me in small ways. So, for example, I remember, so my confirmation journey was a really beautiful one. I was in this country called Brunei and we had a really small confirmation class and we used to go for these retreats and those retreats were just like they were planned so beautifully and there were so many moments of just kind of sitting in front of the Blessed Sacrament and someone would talk to us about God's love. And I very distinctly remember feeling, having this experience or just kind of this very deep conviction that Jesus Christ loved me and that he died for my sins. It was like a very personal thing that I experienced. You know, I was probably like 15 when I experienced that. And so, you know, I had these like moments where, you know, the gospel kind of became real. There's many other moments, like, for example, when I moved back to India, this is still when I was living this kind of sinful life, but I was part of this youth group and I would keep going for retreats with this youth group. I guess you could say I was living a double life, but I was going for these retreats and like they would keep talking to me about God's love. I remember one retreat, I must have been like 18, where a good friend sat down next to me and prayed with me during this prayer session. And I remember, like, I remember sitting on the floor cross-legged, closed my eyes, and I remember really, like, you know, asking God to show me that he was really there, that he was, like, looking out for me. And I remember feeling, like, this kind of peace, it, like, washed over me, like, literally as if someone had doused my body in, like, you know, this feeling of peace and love. And I was just so convicted that he was real. And I guess that conviction, it never really went away. So I kind of knew there were these mini moments in which I knew that Jesus really loved me and he died for me. But, you know, like, kind of thinking, like, what happened when I was 20? What was the difference when I actually experienced my personal conversion? Is not just that I had heard the gospel, because I had heard the gospel proclaimed many times before that, and not just that I was invited to respond, because I was invited to respond to the gospel many times before that as well, but I think this time that I was actually able to see my sins for what they were and repent of them. And you know, that didn't happen on the first day that I heard the story of St. Paul. It happened over many months later, after I heard the story and after I wanted to kind of come back to God, that I became aware that it was my sins that were stopping me from kind of, you know, letting the sunshine in, which is an analogy I'd used before. And I wanted to repent of my sins so that I could be closer to God. So I think that was like the last step that was kind of missing from the many moments in the past, was a willingness, which I believe that willingness is also like a grace, like a gift from God. He gave me that grace to be able to repent of my sins. But that is kind of what made the evangelization complete for me, if that makes sense.
Right. So it sounds like you had a lot of moments where in different ways the gospel was proclaimed to you, right? Because, you know, you can't be evangelized unless the gospel has been proclaimed to you. And it sounds like it was proclaimed to you in different ways. And all of those things probably added up to, you know, the moment when you actually were able to completely and wholeheartedly accept the salvation of God and embrace Jesus. So that's really beautiful. You know, I think that's very much a Catholic idea of, you know, that it's not necessarily a one-time thing, but something that we experience through our lives. And but of course, it has to reach a point, right, where you say, yes, like this is it, like I want this, I receive you, I accept you, you know, all of this is for me too.
Yes, exactly. You know, I actually, like, I wanted to share this analogy that I learned when I was in the Philippines. They used to call them like spiritual markers. And so the imagery that we use to understand where people were in the evangelization process is like to think of this road that you're going somewhere, you have a destination, and there are these mile markers along the way. And so, like, you know, hearing the gospel is one of the mile markers. Hearing the invitation to respond to God's love is one of the mile markers. Repentance is also one of the mile markers. And, you know, each of those mile markers are important on the way to the destination, which is being evangelized, like, you know, the evangelization being complete. And so each of those mile markers is important, but you need to get to the end. Like, you know, that's the goal, is to get everyone to the end of that process.
Yes, I read a wonderful book called Forming Intentional Disciples, which talks about the same thing. It's probably, you know, just different ways of saying the same thing. But Sherry Waddell, the author, talks about something similar, the different stages of, you know, evangelization, or until you reach the point of intentional discipleship. And it was so interesting to me, and I think we can and will talk about it more later, but in a different episode. But the point was that most people, you know, are on a journey, and we don't know what stage of the journey they're on, but that the gospel needs to be proclaimed to them many times, you know, because you don't know what stage they're at.
Yeah, so how about you, Susanna? Like, how were you evangelized? Tell us about that process in your life.
So, in some ways, it was similar to yours in that I grew up in a very Catholic world, a Catholic charismatic world, in fact, and in a family which was very, very immersed in the Christian faith. And the really beautiful thing is, even though my family was not perfect, and neither was, I don't think I was completely evangelized when I was very young. I don't know how many are, really. But I do remember some very specific moments in my life from a young age where I did come to know the love of Jesus, and I did come to know that Jesus was a real person who really loved me and cared about me. And I want to tell you a little story. It's about little Susanna, just 5 years old. I remember this very specifically. I remember my mom telling me that Jesus loved me, and that If I was ever in trouble, if I was scared, if I didn't know what to do, I could just close my eyes and say a little prayer to Jesus and ask him to help me. And that's so simple, and yet it's so true, right? And I remembered it because one day I was at school and little Susanna had just come out of her kindergarten class, and usually my dad would pick me up from school, and I came out of class that day and my dad was nowhere to be seen. And I went to a big school, you know, there were lots of children, lots of parents, lots of people all around, and it was scary because there was just like a lot of people and no dada. And I remembered in the moment when my mom told me, I closed my eyes and I said a little prayer. I said, Jesus, I'm scared. You know, where's my dada? Like, please send my dada to me right now. And I opened my eyes and my dad was there right in front of me. And obviously it made enough of an impact that I remembered all these years later. I knew that God was real. I experienced him to be real and that his love was real. And that was the first step, right? That was like the base to know that Jesus is real and that he's a real person. He's someone you can talk to. He's someone who loves you and cares about the details of your life.
Can I just say that that story is just so beautiful. And so, like, I'm just like thinking, aw, like, would that all of us as children have that experience of just like firm knowledge that Jesus is listening to our prayers?
Right. I mean, it actually is that simple, right? But we don't always realize it's that simple. But obviously that wasn't enough. And as I shared in the first episode, you know, about my own journey of going into like a sort of judgmental, extreme sort of version of Catholicism, and where I myself reached a place where I was able to realize that I was a sinner. I think that that's a point that is missing, I think, for many Catholics. Like, we don't really think that we personally need to be saved. You know, like, I'm fine. Jesus came for those other sinners out there. But for me, that was obviously a very big point. But before that, and this is a really important turning point in my life, when I was 14 years old, I also went on a confirmation retreat. And I remember specifically at this retreat, there was like a big group of us, you know, like everybody goes to confirmation when they're in the ninth standard, at least when I was a kid. And everyone was sent for this, for confirmation classes and for confirmation retreat, whether or not they wanted to be there. And most of it was just, you know, lots of like, you know, romances and crushes and, you know, all of the 14-year-old drama that was happening. But in the midst of that there was something spiritual happening as well. Because I remember there was a session where we were asked, the Blessed Sacrament was exposed, and we were asked, we were told, you know, you might be here because your parents have sent you here, but today, right now, we want to invite you to make a personal decision to whether you want to really follow Jesus and, you know, make him the Lord of your life to... so it's not just your parents' faith, but your faith as well. And you can choose. And they said, no one can make you do that. No one can force you to do that. It's something that you choose on your own. And in fact, dinner served downstairs, those who would prefer to leave right now and go down for dinner, you're free to do so. Those who would like to come forward and just before the Blessed Sacrament and make a personal commitment to Jesus, we invite you to do so. And it's so crazy because there was like 100 of us perhaps, and about 80 people just got up and walked out.
Oh, wow.
It's just so sad, right? But I guess, you know, peer pressure and whatnot. And maybe they had not experienced the love of God perhaps in that way before. But I do remember a few of us walking forward, kneeling down before the Blessed Sacrament and just saying, you know, I remember saying to Jesus quietly in the quiet of my heart, saying, Jesus, like, I want this. Like, I want you. I want to follow you, not just because my parents are following you, but I want you. And I was only 14, right? That's kind of young. But I think that God took me seriously, you know, and I did try to follow him. And I think at the right moment, I was able to have a much deeper experience. But it was because I had walked through that open door that was presented to me. So I think that's big in evangelization, right? Like that, the open door being offered, and it was offered to me and I did walk through it.
Can I ask you something?
Yes.
Okay, so if someone's listening to this and thinking, you know, I think that I have been evangelized. It sounds like I've, you know, these things have happened to me, the things that you're describing. But I still feel like I have a way to go. Like, you know, I'm not done yet. You know, God's not done with me. I'm still like working on different parts of my life. I've not maybe fully surrendered to him. I don't think that, you know, the process is finished for me. So like, what do you think? Like, is that person evangelized yet?
So there are two things, I guess, two stages that maybe it's something that we need to look at our own lives and say, are we talking about evangelization or are we talking about discipleship? Because evangelization is when we are fully accepted and receive the good news. It doesn't mean we've got all of our stuff together. You know, it doesn't mean that we are sinless or that we've, you know, completely, you know, we're already saints, because I don't think anyone's there yet. But we are sincerely pursuing God. We have accepted His salvation, you know, consciously. We've, you know, we are being saved, you know, is another Catholic thing. Is like, you know, we're running to confession. We are sincerely striving to cling to Jesus and to allow Him to save us. Now, if you have accepted that, you know, hey, you're evangelized. If you believe in Jesus, you're sincerely trying to follow Him, even with, you know, you're failing, you're falling, you're making mistakes, you're running back to confession, you are still evangelized. But you are probably in the process of discipleship, which is where we bring different areas of our life to God, and we allow Him to purify them, and we more and more try to allow Him to make us into His image. Right. So you might be in the process of discipleship. That's great. That's all of us. You know, we haven't reached until we reach heaven.
So even though this podcast is called Saints These Days, we aren't right. Saints.
We are not yet canonized saints. We're not yet saints in heaven. We are saints in the making. Right. So tell me, Krishan, we promised here, you know, evangelization tips that really work. So that's a pretty high order. And we seem pretty confident about ourselves. But let's see. All right. Here's a way to figure out what makes something work. If someone were evangelizing you, right? Okay. If you did not already have the good news, did not know the good news, you know, you're just like, I just don't care. Like, I've just got other stuff going on. I just haven't heard this stuff. What would make you open to listening to this? To something new, to something, you know, that could be transforming, but it's just not something that you've heard before. What would make you open, and what would turn you off from like somebody trying to evangelize you?
Okay, so the first thing that comes to mind is what really works for me and what has worked for me in the past is someone telling me about Jesus or sharing the gospel with me in the context of a relationship that I already have with that person. So, you know, I have encountered like street evangelists, so people kind of coming up to me on the street. I encountered them after my conversion, but I've talked to them because I want to see like what their strategy is. And honestly, I don't know, maybe there is a type of person for who that works, but it doesn't work for me because the entire time I'm just thinking like, what do you know about my life? And I guess they don't even ask me whether I know Jesus. They just kind of start talking about it. And I just feel like it's so impersonal, which doesn't make sense, because like our faith is personal. It's deeply personal. It's the most personal thing. It's a relationship. It's not a idea. It's not a philosophy. It's a relationship with Jesus. And so it makes sense to me that we share this in the context of a relationship. And let me give you like two, I have these two examples, not of what happened to me, but of examples from other people's lives that they've shared with me of how they were evangelized in the context of relationships. So one guy, when he was in college, he was invited to go play basketball with this group of men. And this guy, he really wanted to get better at basketball. And these guys who he was invited to play with, they were much better than him. And so he was like, okay, if I go and play basketball with these guys, I'm going to get better because they're so good. So he started playing with them on a regular basis. And these guys, you know, they were so good that they challenged him to be better. And he began looking up to them just because they were so good at basketball. And of course, they became friends as well. And the more he played with them, the more he noticed there was something different about them. The way that they talked to each other were different. The way that they talked to each other was different. They always built each other up. They were encouraging, you know, like it's kind of usual when guys are playing for there to be a lot of foul language and people getting upset with each other. But they were generally very encouraging to each other, even if they were like on opposite teams. And they were very interested in his life. So like, you know, after basketball, they'd all go and hang out. And it was never like, you know, stupid conversations about girls or like, you know, whatever, like crass things. But it was like really like, oh, how's it going? How's your life going? What are your struggles? And like, you know, what's coming up on the horizon? Things like that. And he just felt like these guys were living life differently. And one day he was like, hey, what's the deal? Like, you know, what's like, you know, how do you guys all know each other, I guess, is what he asked them. And they told him about this youth group that they were a part of, and they invited him to the youth group. And then when he entered the youth group and he kind of, I guess he went through some kind of like evangelization, like seminar, is when he realized that the reason that they were so different is because they knew Jesus. And then he decided he wanted to follow Jesus as well because of that. And I feel like that's such a great example of like, you know, someone like, you know, being included in someone's life and seeing the real lived out effects of knowing Jesus Christ. Like, you know, the knowledge that transforms our life, a relationship that transforms our life. And like, you know, seeing that and being attracted to it, wanting to know more.
So, yeah, so I'm hearing you say like just two really important points. One is witness, obviously, like literally our lives should look different and feel different and be different. But not enough just to be living differently. It's like you said, it's literally including people in our lives. So finding ways to invite people into our normal lives, into, you know, the games we play, the activities we do, the social activities, the outreaches, the family life, like just some way of building relationship before we even be like, you know, hey, do you know Jesus as your Lord and Savior? So witness and invitation. I love that, or like inclusion.
And I guess if I were to put it into a sentence, it's something that I heard, it was said around me a lot when I was in the Philippines and training to be a youth worker. And something they would say a lot, it was a principle they lived by, is that they don't care what you know until they know that you care. And so like in general, like just think about yourself, right? Like in your life, are you going to take advice from someone who doesn't care about you? Absolutely not. If someone is kind of, you know, inserting themselves into your life with a very clear agenda that they want to get you for a certain, I'm just thinking of these like very like pushy, like, you know, insurance like calls that you keep getting, or the loan calls that you keep getting. You hate them. You never want to speak to them.
Okay, I have to say something right here. I live with my husband and his parents. My father-in-law is very sick and my mother-in-law is a woman of great faith. But somehow I feel like she's become a little bit a target of people like that. So people who come in with an agenda, and very often they're Protestants, but they say they want to come and pray, which we're always, you know, my mother-in-law is always open to, but then they start like being super pushy about, you know, why we should be Protestant, not Catholic, or, you know, one try to evangelize my husband, who is very much evangelized. but yes, it's, you know, very much coming in with an agenda and a very pushy agenda. And I don't blame anybody who gets totally put off by such tactics, because I would, you know, I'm evangelized and I hate it. So yeah, absolutely. No agendas.
It's just not a loving thing to do, to like, you know, kind of push into someone's life with an agenda and like, you know, not care about what they're actually going through.
Right, exactly. So that's what a lot of people think of evangelization as, or missionaries as. And we want to just put it out there that we are totally against that. And we think that's just wrong. And it's also not effective, right? It's not just wrong. It's also not effective. All right, what else have you got?
Okay, so another example is very similar to what I just shared, but like in the context of a different kind of relationship. So when I was in the Philippines, I met this girl who was part of this group of young professionals who were like, you know, kind of like a youth group, but for slightly older people. And I asked her, like, you know, how, like, what made you join this group? Like, what made you so excited about your faith? And she told me that she used to be an atheist, and she was attending this Catholic university. And because it was a Catholic university in the Philippines, she had to take a theology course. And so her professor was this guy who really loved the Lord. He was evangelized himself. He wasn't just teaching the faith, but he really knew Jesus. And she would get into these, like, really annoyingly long debates with him, sometimes during class, sometimes after class. She just kind of go up to him and be like, you know what, you don't make any sense, your religion doesn't make any sense, I don't like it. And he was just he is such an affable man. I know him personally, he's a good friend. And he just kind of took all of her rebuttals and all of her, I guess, vitriol that she had for the religion. And he was just like, yeah, like, it's okay, like, you know, you feel this way about Jesus, that's perfectly fine, but I know him. And he's a great guy. I can't recommend him enough. And he just kind of very patiently bore witness to her over the course of a year. And one day he knew of this group, this young professionals group that was having like a Life in the Spirit seminar, which is an evangelistic seminar. And so he invited her for it. And I guess they had become friends over the course of all of their, you know, arguments and back and forths. And so she was like, you know what? Yeah, let me just, you know, he's inviting me for this. Let me just check it out. And during that seminar is when she had a personal experience of God's love, and her mind was changed and her heart was transformed by that personal experience. And just listening to that was so cool to me, because like it's a different kind of relationship, right? Like it's not just like friends, but like it's like your professor talking to you. But we can still be friends with people who are not like, you know, in the same situation as us, and we can take those opportunities to share, but in a very like, I guess he was really likable in the way that he spoke to her, that he did not put her off, which I think also is like a really important thing, is that we don't like, you know, bash people over the head with the truth, but we don't take ourselves so seriously either. We're like, yeah, you know what? It's okay. You don't want to believe this. That's fine. But this is so true for me.
So being likable helps.
Who would have thought, right?
We should all strive to be more likable.
Yeah.
Right. I guess if I like someone, I am much more likely to be open to what they're saying, right?
Exactly. And I think that, you know, sometimes we take this thing so seriously. Maybe, like, I don't know if other people can relate to this, but I guess for me in the beginning, it was like, oh my God, I need to tell everyone about Jesus, because if I don't tell them, who's going to tell them? And I guess that kind of puts a lot of pressure on these, like, you know, evangelization conversations where we're like, oh gosh, I need to tell them everything about the gospel and everything that I know. And I need to make sure that they change their minds. I need to make sure that they accept Christ into their hearts, like, right now. Because if it doesn't happen with me, it's not going to happen at all. And that's just, like, you know, it's just not true, first of all. It puts so much of pressure on the conversation. I remember, like, a few years ago, I conducted this workshop on how to share the gospel, where I talked about how we can share the gospel, like, you know, in a conversational way, in a chill way that is friendly and invites people and does not start a fight. And after that workshop, I had one of my participants tell me, he was like, you know, thank you so much for conducting this workshop, because I did not know that it was possible to have a gospel conversation in a friendly manner. And I guess what he was doing is just kind of going around, like, you know, getting a lot of people upset with him, like his friends were upset with him, and he was losing friends because he just kept talking about Jesus, like, almost obnoxiously, like, repeatedly. And I guess he just, like, never thought about, like, you know, a way to do it in a way that made him likable and people actually wanted to talk to him. So yeah, just like, I want people to know that, you know, you can do this in a friendly way. If people are getting put off by your demeanor and your attitude, then it's a you problem. It's not a gospel problem, because the gospel is attractive. It can be attractive.
Absolutely. I mean, we think about, are we really presenting the face of Jesus when we get into like really angry arguments? And probably not. And, you know, no matter what you're saying, if people see you and are just like repelled by you personally, you know, your words, they're not even going to get to the words.
So these are some of my evangelization tips at a personal level. Susanna, I know that you have a lot of experience doing evangelization at the parish level or in groups, so I want to hear your tips. But this episode has gotten really long, so I think what we're going to do is we're going to end it right here, and then we're going to pick up right where we left off next week. We're going to talk about evangelization tips that actually work, part 2. So stay tuned for that episode and follow us on Instagram. We are Saints These Days. Thank you so much for listening.